Hi, this is Franklin Kiermaier. You're listening to the Jazz Disturbance with Cheryl Kay on 90.7 FM WCXC Accra. Off my latest album entitled Further, this is the first song, Between Joy and Consequence, featuring Azar Lawrence on saxophone, Benito Gonzalez on piano, and Junie Booth on bass.
Thank you. live in studio. Between Joy and Consequence. From the release Further by Franklin Kiermaier. From the Mobility Music Records label. Is that your own record label?
Yes, it is.
Wow. We're going to talk about that too, as well as whipped cream. Don't think I have forgotten that. Okay. That's John Esposito, by the way. Okay and hooray.
Okay and hooray. No way.
We'll talk about that later. Anyway, from vocalist Kurt Elling, from his 2003 Blue Note release, Man in the Air, we heard The More I Have You. And we started that set off with Connie Evingson, along with John Hendricks, from the release All the Cats Join In on Mini Ha Ha Music. Two tunes they put together, All the Cats Join In and Tickle Toe. It is now 1 minute past 8 o'clock. Why don't we take a little break here and get back into this interview with these two gents. And I am so happy to have company in the studio this evening. I have drummer, composer, and band leader Franklin Kiermaier here to my right. And to his right, we have pianist, educator, band leader, arranger, composer, diaper changer, and owner of Sun Jump Records, John Esposito. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
So happy to be here.
Pleasure. Yeah.
You know, we're all kind of like, yeah, when's it time for a drink, right?
Well, I'm afraid we already did that, so.
Oh, yeah. Man!
Yeah, without you, so.
Fine.
Yeah.
I'll remember it for the next time.
Mm.
We've been celebrating a reunion of sorts.
Yeah. What have you been celebrating? What have you been doing?
Well, we've been working on some new music. John and I are old friends and serious colleagues. Through the years, have gone through some wonderful periods of discovery and development together. And we're back working on some new stuff. I'm on my way back to New York City to work with my new quartet there. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a great period of evolution.
Yeah.
So we're excited.
Yeah. What's your connection to the Hudson Valley?
Well, my connection to the Hudson Valley and to the Catskills and to this grand area, this grand green area in general, is that, I guess it started way back when I was in my late teens and early 20s. I grew up in Montreal. And I suppose from my teen years I was drawn to the Catskills, to especially Woodstock area, partly because of its history with creative music and creative vibe, but also because it was a real center for meditation, for Tibetan Buddhist practice, which is something I was interested in from an early age. And there's a great monastery at the top of the mountain in Woodstock called Karma Triana Dharma Chakra. So from a pretty young age, I was drawn to go up there. So that's my first kind of experience with this general area. But what happened was that some years later, when I did move to New York to pursue music in an increasingly serious way, I was asking around about what piano players were strong enough and adventurous enough to kind of step out of the box. And repeatedly, my friend John Esposito over here, his name would come up in conversation. And being the kind of dogged person I am, I pursued it and got in touch with him. And of course, he was living at that time in Woodstock, I guess, when we first met many years ago. And so over the years, I spent quite a lot of time both working with John. I moved up to that area for a while. Mostly I was living in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my general connection with the general area.
Yeah. And this new collaboration, this isn't the first recording that you've had, or is it?
No, it's not. Our first recording together was many years ago, a quartet that I put together with John that featured the saxophone player Pharoah Sanders and had the great Drew Gress on bass. Mm. And we did an album called Solomon's Daughter at that time. And then John and I recorded previous to that.
Yeah, we did with Dave Douglas, John Stubblefield, mm-hmm. Anthony Cox.
Right.
Yeah.
And the brass quartet, was it? It was
Chris Gecker. Yeah.
Rojak.
Right, John Rojak, the great, great bass trombone player from the American Brass Quintet. And
Dave Brainerd.
Dave Brainerd on tuba. And the horn player, it wasn't Dave Jolly. Anyhow, let's see if I can find that information somewhere. Russ Risner, great, great horn, French horn player. So, yeah, that was a brass quintet, and that was put together by my dear friend Chris Gecker, great, great trumpet player. But John and I worked very, very closely on those records. So I guess actually all through the years we've worked on four of my albums together.
Mm-hmm.
So John has been, pardon the pun, extremely instrumental in my development and my steps towards realizing my vision. And of course I've learned a lot by working with him.
Yeah. Well, I'd say the same.
Yeah. Yep. So this new release is coming out on Sun Jam?
No.
No?
Well, we're currently just in the figuring out what we're trying to play.
Got it.
Stage.
Okay.
But Franklin has another project, several of the projects, which are in further along.
Okay.
And one is this great quartet that you just heard. Mm-hmm. On his new release further.
Mm-hmm. And can we talk about these sidemen? They all have their own history.
Yeah.
Sure. There's a kind of larger continuum to what musical precedent that, in fact, was part of the magnetism that brought John and I together. For want of a better expression, you could say that there's a spiritual vibe in music that both John and I were very drawn to on our own, as I suppose, as youngsters. And so part of what I've sought out through the years are people that exemplify that, people that have kind of followed that path. And John very much has that kind of passion and release vibe in his playing. So there's other musicians that both John and I heard growing up that exemplify that as well. Certainly, many people have been influenced by John Coltrane, who's the most obvious example of somebody that's followed the spiritual vibe in music as far as he could possibly go in the years that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the great quartet that John Coltrane had together was peopled by McCoy Tyner on piano, Elvin Jones on drums, and Jimmy Garrison on bass. And after Coltrane passed, a couple of years later, McCoy Tyner, the legendary pianist, started his own group and made a few records that were very influential in the next generation, people like me, and I think I can say John, and many other musicians that we know. And those records from the early 70s, the saxophonist Azar Lawrence, who at the time was 19 years old, 19 and 20, he was on those, as well as the bass player Junie Booth, who was a few years older, mm-hmm. both of which are in my on this last song that we listened to from my latest record entitled Further, and are part of my Further quartet. And it also features Benito Gonzalez on piano, who's a Venezuelan pianist that, amongst other things, spent 6 or 7 years playing in one of the latest incarnations of the Kenny Garrett quartet. Kenny Garrett's an alto saxophonist that's widely on the scene.
With Miles Davis.
Right. Yeah. Kenny came up with Miles. And as a matter of fact, Azar, the saxophone player in my group, was also in Miles' band back then at the same time as he was playing with McCoy. I've heard some interesting stories about the arguments that would ensue about who Azar was going to play with that night. But so Azar was very, very popular amongst some of the greatest musicians of those years when he was still a youngster, you could say. Quite a remarkable musician, remarkable person. And so I'm fortunate enough to play with him and Benito and Juni in one of my main ensembles. John and I have developed a lot together over the years. You know, during a musician's career or you know, musical lifetime, most people go through periods of being seriously in the woodshed, you know, seriously developing and focusing and practicing. And I guess the more serious you are, the more time you spend doing that, you know, including all the greats, all the legends that people personally love. You know, these are people that have worked very hard at their. So in my lifetime, there's been a few people, let's say three or four people that I've been seriously in the shed with. And certainly John is one of the foremost of those that I spent a lot of time in transformation with, learning a lot, developing a lot, studying a lot, trying to really confront what was holding the music back and where it was trying to go. So now getting back together after not playing for some years, you know, off on our own trips, which is necessary, we find, first of all, if I can I can speak for myself, an immediate rapport, but also a lot has taken place in the interim, you know. We haven't lost the initial vision, but things are so much clearer and more obvious and fundamentally more faithful, you know, more the passion it flows more easily. So it's a great time.
You know, I wonder for both of you, you know, because you're this, that, and the other thing, composer, performer, arranger, you know, banker, you know, handing out the checks at the end of the night, you know, how do you, I guess, disperse that spirituality and come back the next day and do it all again?
Well, I mean, for me, the music is the motivator for everything, so there's nothing really confusing about it. It's just everything has to serve the music. So once you know what the feeling is of making the music, you know, in an honest way, you just make sure that that's happening, and then everything after that is okay. How can I create the situation for that to happen? How can I create the rehearsal situation? How can I create the gigs for that to happen, for the music to develop? And then, you know, the rest of it is, if the music's positive, the rest of it is going to be, you know, a positive experience for everybody. How people are treated, how people cooperate to make it work, whether they're musicians or other people who are involved in the production of it. So, you know, it's basically, you know, it's kind of, maybe it's a cliche, but if something is a labor of love, then everything that grows out of that will be, you know, that flowers from that will be positive also, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to chime in on that?
I agree completely. It's for me, it's exactly what John says, that all the other things that have to be done, you know, the workaday stuff of whether it's setting up opportunities or distributing whatever monetization comes back from those opportunities to the people involved, or, you know, gathering resources, all of it's part of what makes the music happen. And the whole point is the feeling of the music, the vibe of the music. So the more you stay centered in that, the more able you are to deal with the mundane, so-called mundane tasks. But if you look a little deeper, they're not really mundane, because you're dealing with people, and yourself. So all of them are an opportunity to confront the stuff of spirituality.
Yeah, I tell you what. Why don't we put on some music? Your pick, Franklin. Your pick.
Oh geez.
Oh gee whiz.
Let's see. Off of Further, why don't you play the third cut, which is called Supplication.
And I know there's history behind that, so why don't you give it to us?
Oh, pardon me. That's not the third. It's the fourth cut. Fourth one? Supplication. Okay. Supplication, it's, you know, these titles for me come after the fact. But, and I try to give titles based on how the music feels to me when I listen to it. Supplication's kind of like a prayer. It's kind of like a invocation, a hope that that things can be open and clear and heartfelt without anything in the way. And rather than supplicating these external forces that I hope through some kind of hocus-pocus will give me everything I want, to me it's a little bit more consciously understanding that all these things come from what I fundamentally, what I am, what we all are. And that openness, that honesty, that faith, that love, that's just what's there when you let go of the other stuff. So that's what I hope is supplicated by playing music like this.
All right, let's take a listen. And you're in tune to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA, Hands On Radio. I'm Cheryl Kay. This is the Jazz Disturbance. The time is now 28 minutes before 9 o'clock. Puff! The Magic Stranger comes in from 9:30 to midnight here on your community radio station. We just heard the tune Bidal El Sudan from the release Further by drummer, composer and bandleader Franklin Kiermaier. And that's on his own Mobility Music. He's here in the studio along with pianist, composer and arranger, educator, owner of Sun Jump Records, and father of Lyra. Where is she right now?
I think they're out wandering around outside. It's kind of actually past bedtime. She's 17 months. 17 months old, hard to believe.
And
yeah. Although she was out, we had a gig last night in Woodstock, and she was out, she was there for the first set, which began around 9:30.
See, she's already living the...
She's already there. Yeah, she's already, like, hung out with a lot of famous musicians and...
Yep. She'll be talking about this in, like, 50 years.
Yeah, I have photos of her with Malcolm Cecil, and that he considers himself her great-grandfather. And the Gil Scott Heron Band, when she was about 6 months old, I think it was, something like that. So.
Sweet. Yeah. All right, Franklin.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about this release and just some of the things that... Well, let's talk about Mobility Music.
Sure.
It's your own label. How long have you had it?
Well, I started working on recording, producing my own music quite a long time ago, maybe 25 years ago. And then as the so-called industry started to change, let's say in the past 10 or 15 years, more and more I thought it was a good idea to have a avenue to publish my own stuff.
Yeah.
And so I started Mobility Music. Originally, Mobility Music was kind of like an umbrella name, and I was using Sunship as an imprint. But more and more I've been using Mobility Music as the actual imprint and releasing stuff there. I still work with other labels. I'm open to do stuff, but I really love the model of publishing stuff oneself, making it directly available to people, and having relationships with the listeners. I think it's a fantastic opportunity. So, yeah.
And your co-producer was Michael Cuscuna?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. Michael and I have known each other since soon after my album called Solomon's Daughter, that featured my quartet, which had John, who's sitting to my right, John Esposito on piano, and Drew Gress on bass, and the great Pharoah Sanders on saxophone. And not long after that, Michael Cuscuna and I were in touch with each other. Michael had heard this album, and we started working together. He started helping me, you know, with first by answering questions and helping me get in touch with certain people, and more we developed a relationship where I could bounce things off him and get his creative input. And so, yeah, so he's the co-producer on Further, and we'll be working with each other on the next release as well. So
I know who Michael is and what he's done. Do you want to mention some of the Gosh. Historic things that he's done?
Sure.
As a producer?
Well, I'm not going to be able to give an encyclopedic a review, but Michael's very much a legend in the so-called business of jazz and in production and presentation. Early on, he was a DJ, just like you. He went on to do a variety of things, including manage musicians like Woody Shaw and stuff like that. But produce a lot of records. I mean, he was involved in production with people ranging from, Aretha Franklin to McCoy Tyner to all across the board, and did some incredible work. What he's probably best known as in recent history is the producer of note in the world of archival recordings of legendary musicians. So quite a few years ago, when the Blue Note label was being resurrected, Michael was one of the people instrumental in that. And he was given an opportunity, basically given the keys to the vault at Blue Note, to go through all the archival recordings ranging from Louis Armstrong to Miles Davis, you know, 30 years or maybe even 40 years of incredible, incredible recordings that for one reason or another hadn't been released. Most often simply because of, the economic vagaries of this so-called business. It's just, well, we got to put out one album. We want to put out what we think will be the most palatable cuts. And so a lot of the greatest music just wasn't even
available.
Yeah, was hardly listened to even by the label execs. So Michael is incredibly talented and skilled at going through these incredible recordings and finding the real gems and then getting them post-produced and mastered and releasing them. He has his own label called Mosaic, which does box sets of these and LP and CD for collectors. Yeah,
got to save up a lot of pennies to buy those box sets, but
they're
well
worth it. Out of most musicians' leagues, but collectors, it's just the preeminent label of that kind in the world. But Michael, it's safe to say that Michael is one of the handful of people that are most highly regarded in the business of producing jazz by everybody. And so I'm so fortunate to have his help to bounce things off of, to help me reach people. And it's great.
He speaks highly of you. I read a few things that he said.
Well, I think Michael's, I don't want to say he's one of the rare people that actually loves music, but but Michael is a real champion of music, of the what we call like the music of the kind of real deal, the stuff that has real feeling to it. And I think he's devoted his life to doing whatever he can to get that stuff heard.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a remarkable person.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about some upcoming projects. Is that where we want to go next? What you're doing?
Sure.
Yeah, go with it.
Well, I, aside from my work with John, we're developing some very exciting music that we're letting evolve in its own time. And
And before I forget, let's mention your website, please.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
My website is kiermaier.com, K-I-E-R. M-A-Y-E-R That's what I did last time.
That's right.
KIERMYER.com. Yeah, I guess I have to write up my last name and put it in front of me. But there we go. There we go. Now I see it. Yeah, KIERMYER.com. That's my website. And you can go there and find, listen to music and watch some videos and download the latest album, which is further. Actually, you can download the MP3s for free or the high res files all the way up to the master, which is 96 kilohertz, 24 bit. For any kind of donation. So, So John and I are working on new music. There's the quartet that's on further, which is Azar Lawrence on saxophones and Benito Gonzalez on piano and Junie Booth on bass. Very honored to play with that group. And I have a new quartet that I've been developing in New York, which the Franklin Kiermaier Quartet, which has Lawrence Clark on saxophone, Davis Whitfield on piano, and Nimrod Speaks on bass. And we have our first performance is at the Conceptions Concert Series in Brooklyn at Corso on August 4th.
Coming up.
I think our first hit is at 9 p.m. So August 4th at Corso in Brooklyn.
That's Tuesday night.
Yeah, is it? Yeah. Wow. KORZO. Corso, and we're going to be recording soon after, and again putting together the new album. Very, very excited about this group. It's a big step forward. It's very young players that are deeply committed to the feelings that we're talking about, and to expressing that and to following it as far as it goes. And then I have another quartet that I'm developing, co-led by a wonderful saxophone player in the UK by the name of Nat Birchall. Wonderful, heartfelt player, very, very evolved. And we're co-leading a quartet that we're calling Transcension. And we'll be playing at the Brighton Alternative Jazz Festival. We're headlining that on September the 11th, and obviously that's in Brighton, UK. And then we're going to be in Manchester at Band on the Wall on the 15th, I believe. And I think there's one or two other hits, but I'm not exactly sure of the dates. And I have to look at my calendar. But that's a very exciting group as well. And so there's an envelope that all this music is kind of part of, you know, that vibe, that feeling. But just absolutely wonderful musicians. John Esposito, that's sitting right here next to me, that we've gone through a lot together. Azar Lawrence, Pharoah Sanders, Lawrence Clark, and Nat Birchall. The young Davis Whitfield, the piano player, he's like 22 years old. And boy, his heart's in the right place. And boy, is he playing advanced piano. And really incredibly developed young person. And Benito Gonzalez, very powerful piano player. And Junie Booth. Junie's like the veritable history of the music. He was he was in Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers when he was like 17. Yeah. You know, Junie came up playing everybody from Miles to Elvin to McCoy. Errol Garner. Junie was in Tony Williams' Lifetime for years. You know, the most famous video clips you can find on YouTube, Junie's there. You know, just embodies the vibe of this music that, let's say, John and I grew up listening to, kind of like an older generation, but not. You know, he's here, he's active. So very, very fortunate to be able to play with musicians that really follow that heart vibe, that heart fire, you know. Another wonderful musician that I played with, a guitar player, Tzigi Munoz. Also very much, if I can say, you know, cut of that same cloth, you know. So, yeah, there's a continuum.
But there's also an arc for the both of you. You've been together, what? You've been 20-something years?
Well, we started working probably in, was it 96 or something like that? Or earlier.
Earlier.
90,
Maybe we met around 92 or something.
No, it was 90. It was that early, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I'm a lot younger than you, so I...
So where are you on this arc? If you can talk about it. Like, you know, where are you now? Where are you heading?
Wow.
That's a big one, I know.
You mean the arc like as in mothership, or you mean the arc as in trajectory? Or do you mean both?
I mean either or. Just throwing it out there. But, you know, we're all on some sort of path, whether we know it or not. There's that beginning, middle, and end. Mm. We all know. But
John, I'll let you take this one first.
I like to think that I'm in the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
First of all.
The Lost Tribe. Yes. Ark of the Covenant, for sure.
All that power is... Oh, that's a really hard one, because in one sense, being an improvising musician, or certainly in this kind of improvising, you learn the importance of just being where you are, mm-hmm. you know, and being in the moment. So sort of speculating on where things are, you know, where you'll be in 5 years or where you'll be in 10 years, or I don't. But you have an intuitive sense that of the direction. I can never say how long it's going to take me to develop things, because sometimes it seems some elements of it seem to just take a long, long time, and others just bang, things are right there, just like you have a realization, and it's more like an epiphany, and something opens up, you know. I never know when that's going to be. So I think it's just coming to it every day, almost from zero. I mean, that's something, you know, I tell my students at Bard that they're young and they have a lot of expectations of where they should be already, mm-hmm. and where they're going to be next year and all of that. And it, you know, I end up telling them that it's about almost starting at zero every day, you know, re-examining. I mean, you're always going back and re-examining the most basic elements. I mean, it's almost embarrassing that you would say, well, what did you do today? You know, I worked on playing one note. I worked on playing a triad. Yeah. I worked on playing an interval, you know. You do that for forever, you know. I don't know. Do you get done doing, if you walk for exercise, do you ever get done
Never.
Walking? You know. So, I don't know. You're nodding. Do you feel the same way, Franklin?
Or yeah, very much. I'm nodding because it resonates. You know, I agree. I would, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, you know, in the actual process, there's a few different ways to look at, you know, arc or trajectory or beginning, middle, and end. You know, my biggest feeling is an agreement with the overall arc of what you're saying. There is no beginning, middle, and end. The whole purpose of the music is to transcend that fabrication, that it's, you know, even now is a thought, is a label that you're putting on an experience that's beyond conceptual fabrication. I don't mean to be trippy, but that's why we love music. That's the purpose of music, that it transcends, you know, how you can describe it. You can't, you can talk about the feeling that, you know, good music gives you, but you can't, you know, talking about the feeling isn't the feeling. That's why we love music. So that's the big answer. Mm-hmm. In terms of working on stuff, you know, for me, there's a vision. There's always been a vision. However defined or ill-defined it's been, there's been this vision. Developing the realization of that vision is the gig. That's what I've always been trying to do. That's what I'm still trying to do. Certainly, if I listen to how I play the drums, for example, how I play the drums now as compared to how I played the drums 5 years ago or 25 years ago, Yeah. You know, there's a beginning, middle, at least a beginning and middle, you know, and certainly I'm able to do some of what I set out to do. Will I ever be able to do all that I set out to do? Well, then it spills back into the big truth, which is even now is not something I can define. Yes. Yes, of course. You know, I can get it happening in such a way, on such a level, that beginning, middle, and end is, you know, it's not the point. It's beyond that. And that's the point of doing it. So I've already, let's say, you could say, reached that stage. But ultimately, like John says, this whole thing is about a path. You know, it's about being a practitioner. Like a spiritual practitioner, you know, and the commitment to go deeper and go further and expose your heart more and reflect, confront more and more honestly, that's what it's about.
That was pretty complete. I like that. All right, gentlemen, it is now 9 minutes before 9 o'clock. You're in tune to 90.7 FM. WGXC Acra. Let's close this arc a bit. We talked about some upcoming projects. Talked about the music. I want to give the last word to you gentlemen, some other things that you'd like to say to this listening audience. Go.
Love. Peace love. And love. Love is, you know, John and I both have young daughters. I have Hannah that's soon to be 9 and Ava that's 6.5 and John has Lyra that's, you know, not even 2, you know, year and a half, let's say. And, I'll speak for John, you know, he can correct me if I'm wrong, but more and more and more and more what becomes obvious to me, love is it, man. You know, on whatever level you can access it and spread it around, experience it, that's the point. That's the point of the music, you know. For me, when I let go and forget about defining and holding on to all the things that make me, love is just what's left over. Mm-hmm. And that's the passion, the heart fire that burns up the confusion. That's what this is about, love.
As I was saying to you earlier, someone posted on Facebook to me, you know, forget therapy, just buy some music. Right?
Or make some music.
Or make some music. All right. How do we want to end this? What do you got? Oh, John.
Let's end this with Peace on Earth from Franklin's Evidence CD, Solomon's Daughter.
Ah, yes.
And this features Pharoah Sanders.
It features you, John.
Well, thank you. It features me. But it features
John Esposito on piano.
And Franklin and Drew Gress.
What's the cut?
It's number 4, Peace on Earth.
Peace on Earth. Here we go, folks.
Well, thank you very much, Cheryl.
Of course.
It was a pleasure, as always.
Always nice to see you and the family.
Yeah.